Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The crisis at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan continues. Each day a headline, still no estimate of when evacuees will be able to go home, if the facility will be cleaned up, or if it can ever be declared safe. But for the one nuclear disaster Fukushima is being compared with, Chernobyl, 25 years have passed. It was a quarter century ago today that a systems test at the Chernobyl plant in Ukraine, then part of the old Soviet Union, led to a series of explosions, a meltdown, which spread nuclear fallout into the atmosphere. It was the beginning of a months-long struggle by Soviet authorities to contain the spread of deadly radiation. Thousands of workers joined this fight. Sergei Belyakov was one of them. He's the author of a forthcoming book about his experience called The Liquidator. Liquidators helped tear down and seal the Chernobyl facility. They were not some emergency team brought in by the government. They were volunteers who came in part out of a spirit of possibility 25 years ago, a spirit that Sergei told us is hard to imagine today.
So I wasn't alone. I mean, many people, don't take it wrong. There was a lot of volunteers at the time because we thought Gorby came at the time of 86, you know, it was perestroika going full blast, and people were sort of psyched up a little bit over that whole thing. And
right.
We felt that, by stepping up, we can bring up, a sense of camaraderie and sense of new wave in the country.
So did this sense of camaraderie that came out of perestroika, something that we think of from the history books now, did it betray you in the sense that you were under real, serious medical threat?
In a certain way, yes. I think it's not entirely only medical threat, because obviously at the time when I came to a reality at the station, I didn't know what I'm going to face. But the bitterest part, perhaps, the gruesome part of that, when we were discharged from Chernobyl and we came to Kiev after that, we felt rejection. You know, people in Kiev did not really appreciate what we have done there. And there was perhaps, like I said, the most excruciating news to me and to my friends.
And so they were treating you like radioactive pariahs.
Exactly. They were simply, we went to a restaurant we wanted to eat. We were hungry, and we were told, first of all, we were not let in. They were telling us, please go and change, because we were in our, military clothes, and it was clearly seen that we were liquidators. So they told us, go change to civilian clothes and then come back. You know, we tried to catch a cab. It took us perhaps a good half hour to get the one which, stopped next to us because everybody was feared seeing two guys in military uniform. And everybody knew that we were from Chernobyl, clearly.
And can you recall the symptoms of the kind of radioactive contact that you made there at the center? I mean, you definitely had a sense that this was affecting your body.
Yes, you can actually sense high levels of radiation by distinct symptoms. And it's, to me, it was a clear metallic taste in the mouth, which people would attribute to the iodine in the air, iodine-131, the isotope. But I also felt a headache and the high levels when I was in the roof of the third reactor. I had a stuffy nose, which was similar to asthma symptoms. You know, I had a severe headache. I had allergy type of symptoms. You know, nose was stuffed, and I had a hard time to breathe.
It's just astounding. We're talking with Sergei Belyakov, who's one of the thousands of volunteers who went into Chernobyl 25 years ago and attempted to recover that plant that is still listed as the most severe nuclear disaster of all time. Sergei, what do you think about the workers at the Fukushima Daiichi complex who are doing some of the same work that you did? Not completely similar, but they're going into an unknown situation, as did you.
John, I think they actually sacrificed a big chunk of their health. I wouldn't say lives so far, because the levels they're dealing with are nowhere near that we went through in Chernobyl, honestly. But I think TEPCO, the company who deals with that, is not really progressing well with the liquidation of that overall. The government has to step up. The international community has to step up. There are a lot of things which I sense can be done better and faster than that, based on which I was through in Chernobyl.
Sergei, 25 years after Chernobyl, what became of your co-workers? Do you know any of the stories? And why did you survive? And are there any lessons?
You know, the action of radiation on the human body is different. There are individuals which, when you know, go through that with lesser impact. But I was trained, and I knew, and I hope I saved lives of my troops who went with me to the station as well, because I protected myself well. Even when I was in the roof six times, I was, you know, I was taking all the necessary measures and precautions to not touch things with the hands, you know, do not step where I shouldn't step. And I taught my troops as well to do similar things. I, like I said, I believe this, you know, they learned the lesson, they helped themselves as well. I know of perhaps 4 to 5 guys from my battalion who unfortunately deceased at the moment, so they lost their lives to battle with the cancer after that. And I hope, you know, when I was there, it was a military physician who told us very casually, you know, one time we had a smoke and he kind of more or less opened to me. And he said, whoever went to the roof has to measure about 20 years of their life from now on.
Oh, my God.
And that's it. And, you know, I'm in the 25th year. Like I said, every morning I wake up, I bless all the gods in the world that I'm still alive.
Sergei, was that a mistake, or was that an act of heroism that you would repeat?
I think I would do it anyway if I knew. One thing, John, if you think about it, 86, we never had internet. We didn't have internet at the time. We didn't have any other means of communication besides the government channels. If I had a chance to learn about that stuff, I perhaps would still go, because, like I said, we were absolutely enthusiastic. We thought we were saving a country. Gorbachev, when he talks about these things, he makes believe that he and Politburo were not aware of things. You know, they were held sort of unknown about the real situation, especially in the first few weeks in Chernobyl. I don't buy it. He also says that the total expenditures of the taking care of Chernobyl, including building a sarcophagus, took about 18 billion rubles, which he equals to $18 billion. I would perhaps make it 10 times more than that.
Mm.
But ultimately, that was a dagger in the Soviet Union as a country overall. Obviously, a country never recovered out of that. And it's a bitter taste among all the liquidators that, you know, despite of the fact that we spent so much effort and actually sacrificed our lives for it, many of us, the country did not make it.
Hmm. You went there to save a country, and you ended up observing the dagger that actually brought down the Soviet Union. Sergei Belyakov, of part of the cleanup crew 25 years ago at the Chernobyl reactor in Ukraine. Sergei, thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Pleasure, John. Thank you.
Think about it. Sergei was a volunteer at Chernobyl 25 years ago. There's a heroic job. Continue the conversation online. We're going to take a look at other professions which maybe deserve to be called heroic or need a hero category. Street vendors is the one we're looking at this morning. An award ceremony for street vendors in New York has started a category for heroes, inspired by the Tunisian fruit vendor who started a revolution in North Africa and the T-shirt seller who stopped the Times Square bomber. Share your ideas by calling us 877-8-MY-TAKE. We're looking for the professions you think need a hero category. Special thanks this hour to David Fizikas for consistently making the show sound great. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out this week. This is The Takeaway.